Good morning. Welcome. Glad to see each of you here on this beautiful day. So the title of my message this morning is, Won't You Be My Neighbor? So let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Very good. I suspect that you all, from your response, recognize that that is from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Perfect. Perfect. Now, I think most of you probably do, but some probably don't realize that Mr. Fred Rogers was actually Reverend Fred Rogers. I would simply add that he, of course, was a very good Presbyterian minister. Now, before we go any further into that, let me tell you a little story about neighbors. There was once a man from Siler City who came to Greensboro for the weekend to stay at one of our fine hotels. While he was here, he wanted to visit our big shopping centers and our fancy restaurants. And one night, he decided to take a little walk through the city, and he came across a gang in an alley who ended up beating him up. Took all of his money, left his body crumpled to bleed on the sidewalk. Well, along came a preacher who was on her way to a religious conference. This preacher saw the man lying there, but she was in a hurry, and besides that, she was worried she might get some of his blood on her new robe. So, she didn't have her cell phone with her, but she decided that by the time she got to the church, if she could remember, she would call 911. So, she went ahead and walked away. Then a Sunday school teacher passed by, and he sort of knew that that part of town was a little bit dangerous, and so when he sees the bleeding and beaten man on the sidewalk, he's afraid that whoever beat him up might still be around, so he quickly walked away as well. Then along came a woman who's not a churchgoer. She actually owned a local bar. She's an atheist, and if that were not enough, she gives money to NPR. But she sees this man lying helpless on the sidewalk, and she is overcome with compassion. She gets a car, and she gently helps the man into the back seat. She doesn't worry about whether she's going to get any blood on her clothes or onto her back seat. She just wants to get him to Moses Cone Hospital as fast as she can. Then, discovering the man has no money, she pays the bill herself and gives the staff her phone number and say that they can contact her if there is anything else she can do. Now, you might say that nowadays no one really ever acts like those first two people. No one would actually see a person in need and just walk on by, right? I mean, would they? Well, back in 1985, Carolyn Cooley of Sarasota, Florida, was taking her two kids to church on Sunday and was sort of disgusted to find an unkempt man sprawled against a palm tree on the church property. His shoes had holes in them. His battered hat was pulled down over his eyes, and he was surrounded by empty beer cans. How dare he desecrate the church property like that? Now, she wasn't the only one to be offended by the person's behavior, but her indignation, well, it dissolved into tears when the, as she called, bum walked out of the audience and into the pulpit that morning to give the sermon. Turns out, the homeless man was the church's preacher, Neville E. Gritt. He had dressed like that and stationed himself outside the church building to draw attention to the needs that he had seen in the community as he had driven around that weekend. The reality is, you can find story after story of people acting exactly like that. Like the 65-year-old, true story, 65-year-old man who stepped on a manhole cover that happened to tip and caused him to fall inside the hole. He was trapped there for a full 45 minutes, even as people walked by seeing his predicament. But they just ignored him and walked on by. Not very neighborly. We might like to think that no one really acts like that, but reality begs to tell us a different story. Reality begs to tell us the story of humanity, a story riddled with unneighborly acts because a person doesn't act like us, think like us, look like us, love like us. A history chock full of slavery and hate crimes, corporate abuse, bullying and all around uncaring acts of abuse and belittlement, acts of hatred and harassment, acts carried out by the powerful over and against those they might see as the least of these. Acts, well, that are downright unneighborly, to say the very least. Okay, so let's lighten the mood just a little bit. This is the participatory part of this sermon. I am going to name a TV person or couple, and you are going to name their neighbor. Are we ready for this? I promise most of them are 80s and 90s, so we're probably okay here. Okay. Dennis the Menace. Hello, Mr. Wilson. Right? Exactly. Jerry Seinfeld. Kramer. Good one. Laverne and Shirley. Come on. Lenny and Squiggy. Good one. The Flintstones. The Rubbles. Exactly. Ricky and Lucy Ricardo. The Mertz, Fred and Ethel Mertz. The Simpsons. This might be a little trickier. Ned Flanders, good call. Last one, and this one is, I'll admit, a little tricky. Tim the Toolman Taylor. All right, what's his name? Anybody know? Somebody's going to get this. I can feel it. Oh, you almost have it. I can see you forming the letter in your mouth. Wilson. Wilson. Does anyone know Wilson's last name? Wilson. His name was Wilson Wilson. True. All right, it's interesting. We have a pretty easy time recognizing these TV neighbors. But in real life, we seem to have a little more difficult time. Specifically, we Christians don't always do a very good job of being the neighbors that we are called to be. And in part, that's because after some 200 or 2,000-ish years, we still have a problem understanding who Jesus taught us we are supposed to call our neighbors. We're told to love our neighbors as ourselves. And, well, I mean, depending on how you define neighbor, that's either incredibly easy to do or incredibly difficult to do. And it would seem that the definition of who is my neighbor was particularly problematic during biblical times as well. The parable that Ralph read for us today seems to be, in part, Jesus' way of answering the question, who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? Think about our earlier story about the gentleman from Siler City. Which of those three neighbors... Which of those three was a neighbor to the man who was beaten? The bartender, obviously. When you put that story into play in our own lives, when what Jesus is trying to teach us is that our neighbor, your neighbor, is anyone who is in need. Not just the person that lives next door, not just the people with whom you are most comfortable, not just people who act like you and think like you and look like you and love like you. Anyone who is in need. If you honestly want to be a Christian in more than just name, if you honestly want to follow Jesus rather than just know about Jesus, if you want God and the world to know that you are Christian, if you want that, it will be by your love. Your love for neighbor. Your love for those in need. And let's face it. We are all in need. Whether we're willing to acknowledge it or not, none of us, not one of us, has enough love in our lives, has enough grace in our lives, has enough peace in our lives, have enough hope in our lives. We are all in need of something, be it food, water, love, a friend, a helping hand, spiritual nourishment, intellectual understanding, emotional stability. We are all indeed in need. This really isn't a revelation, although it can sometimes feel like it. You see, all the way back in Leviticus, God said, our neighbors are both one of your people and people you don't know, or the foreigners living amongst you. God has always told us to love everybody. From the very beginning, even in the way that the creation story was told, the way that it says that we are each made in the image of God, God is asking us, encouraging us, telling us, demanding of us to love one another, even as God has loved us. What you have to ask yourself is, do I? Do I love my neighbor? Do I love those in need? And then acknowledging that everyone is in need, do I show love to all? Not just in my heart, not just in my actions, but in my deeds, in my words. And that brings us back to the title of my message and the original author of it, Mr. Reverend Fred Rogers. We can learn a lot from him. It turns out that his TV persona, it wasn't a persona at all. It was his reality. For instance, once he was rushing to a meeting in New York and finding no cab available. True story. He hopped on the subway. Before the ride was over, the whole car, people from all walks of life were singing, "It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood." Anytime he was faced with someone who the world looked upon negatively as different, he practiced tolerance and love, saying, "God loves you just the way you are." Or as actor Michael Keaton, who actually once worked for him on the show, said, "He was one of the truly great guys, a really, really good person. And the thing about him was he was consistently decent." Do you allow your Christian identity to be a persona or a reality? If you have said a disparaging word about someone in the last month, you've probably got work to do. If you have passed someone by in need, you've got work to do. If you've talked about someone behind their backs, you've got work to do. This is a tough one. If you approach relationships with evangelicals or radical Muslims or far-right political conservatives in a way that distances them from yourself rather than nurtures your relationship, you've got work to do. I know that I do. The bottom line is this. We've all got work to do. We're only human. It's hard work to not just walk on by those in need. It's hard work to love those we might see as unlovable. It can be hard work to love those who don't act like you, think like you, look like you, love like you. But that is what we are called to do. And giving it lip service isn't enough service. I can tell you now, God has no use for lip service. That's just not the kind of service God seeks. Just saying that you believe in those things is not good enough for God. In the eyes of God, you do not believe them until you are putting them into practice. In our story, the first two people presumably said they believed these things, but they did not put them into practice. Every time you don't put them into practice, every time our actions fall short of being loving, we belie the reality of truly being the people we are called to be. One of the ultimate examples of putting this belief of loving neighbor, this belief of loving those in need, this ultimate example, well, it's set on the table before us. Not long after Jesus told this very parable, he was falsely accused, stripped, and beaten nearly to death. That he hung on a cross to die while so many of those he loved turned their backs on him. He did it because he refused to walk on by those in need. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. A beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor?